Blog Talk Radio.
You can go home now. We have already taken out the garbage.
I wanted to question them.
We have the answers we need.
I guess that means I have questions for you.
Goodbye, Captain America.
We need to talk. Maybe you just lop off the head of every newcomer who hits town.
If we did that, you wouldn't have yours.
But those Nazis were here for a reason.
Yes, to steal our vibranium. The mineral that can only be found here, in Wakanda. Hitler needs it for the next generation of their missile systems. As do you.
These are dangerous times. You need to choose a side.
We have our own. We take our borders very seriously, and you have crossed ours.
Now look here.
Mistake.
Okay, buddy. I've just about had it. You're just plain rude.
Move back. I've been following your fledgling career, Steve Rogers.
How did you know my name?
I think in time, you will represent to your nation what the Black Panther represents to Wakanda. And that is a good thing. But today, I must teach you a lesson.
Faster than a speeding bullet! More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome to yet another fun fact, finding fact edition of The Grindhouse, where both shows, this is essentially a double feature matinee. The Comic Shop at 6 p.m., and of course, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk at 7 p.m. And guess what? The Uncanny Daryl B returns. You know what? I'm going to forego the Nerdcore Urban Alternative intro, music intro. We'll get to more music as the show ensues, but let's just get into it. Let's just mix it up. First up, of course, we have the Captain. Captain, you know what time it is. Do your thing.
I'm just coming in. No intro. Coming right in. Let's go.
I guess I just went off script somewhat, and I'm just going to bring in Darryl as well. Normally, I would have his intro ready, but time is of the essence. Darryl, welcome.
Welcome, guys, and my thanks to Silver Snail Comics up in Toronto for hosting me on my final day at Caravana. You guys were great, and I got a Captain Canuck pick. That's beautiful.
Cool. Folks, listen, feel free to buzz on in. Give us your questions, your protestations, your thoughts, what have you. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Now, while you were vacationing, Darryl, the captain and myself, we were discussing the Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm pretty sure that our stalwart listenership are waiting with bated breath for you to unpack with your own review of the Guardians. So give us your thoughts on this movie.
All right. Well, for all the people out there that laughed, what I said, my idea for a Superman movie would him not be on Earth at all. So you would be able to learn about Superman so you would be able to care about Superman. Guess what? You had to just look at Guardians. Look at how they did it. Look at how they got you to care about Star-Lord. Look at how they got you to care about Gamora. Look at how Rocky went way over like gangbusters. You know how many people I heard say I am Groot over the last freaking 2 weeks? That is what I meant, folks. All right? This was a perfect origin movie and a perfect setup movie. And right now, James Gunn is right on target to be right there. If Whedon has any problems whatsoever, Marvel has found their switch hitter. And he's already talking about, hey, this was such a great success. You know what? We can do a Thunderbolts movie. We can do a Rising Star, folks. This was almost perfect as a setup movie. The only thing I found wrong with Guardians is they didn't let Gamora be Gamora. She had one scene in prison where she was able to shiv somebody. Well, somebody's, you know. But if you read the comics with Gamora, you know this is not a woman to be trifled with. They kind of fridged her in this. They kind of made her more vulnerable than she is. But outside of that, and that's not saying the role was bad. Zoe Saldana worked well with what she had. But, yo, Chris Pratt, he's now a flying star. I got a friend who's already saying, hey, saw Guardians. You know what? That Indiana Jones remake, he'd be perfect as Indiana Jones. That's how he played it. It was a combination of Indiana Jones and Han Solo, what he was doing. And, hey, Bradley Cooper, Vin Diesel, nothing more needs to be said. Hell, even Batista did well in the Drax role, you know? So I had friends who were like, okay, Diesel, where you rank him? And like, Avengers is my one. Captain America and Guardians are right there at your neck. You know, depending on what type of mood I'm in, I could easily swap any one of these three movies in to go, I'm going to go nuts on. But here it is. The bar has been raised. Warner Brothers, Sony, Fox with your, oh, we wrapped up the shooting of Fantastic Four in 4 weeks. Really? 4 weeks? 4 weeks of shooting is going to match this Guardians. Good luck with that. The die has been cast, the bar has been raised, and once again, Marvel Studios is up top saying, come at me, in Thanos style. Come at me, I'm right here. I can't wait for Avengers now. I can't wait for Guardians Return in Avengers 3. Yes, I said it, Avengers 3, Guardians and Avengers. I can't wait for this now. The die has been cast, the bar has been raised. Warner, Fox, Sony, bring on quality, because that's what you need right now. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more, Daryl. Of course, there's already talk about there being an Avengers Guardians crossover. I mean, we've got to see that. We kind of saw that in the comic books recently with Iron Man and the Guardians. And, you know, we know Tony Stark has pelvic sorcery abilities, at least so we thought, with Gamora, which is, I'm not going to go any deeper than that, but we'll see how that turns out. The only thing I'm surprised you didn't bring up, because I didn't think that Gamora, I know where you're going with this, because you could almost make the same argument with how Wolverine is played cinematically and Gamora. Well, Gamora is, you know, listen, she's the daughter of Thanos. She's not to be trifled with. We see that there's a budding friendship between her and Angela. Both are fierce female characters, but I didn't have a problem with Gamora's portrayal or depiction. What I want to ask you is, what about the Nova Corps and the fact that they appear to be depowered? I mean, we don't normally see Novas in ships, really. I mean, you know, the helmet's supposed to give powers. I mean, the costumes were a little bit, you know, kind of lame. They were treated too much too much like a police force.
Well, hey, what just bombed in the box office? Green Lantern. You want to avoid comparisons to that at all costs. We, the comic fans, know what that is. But who's to say now that the unleashing of the power gem on Xandar doesn't spark their computer to life, doesn't spark. They found some way to harness some of that energy to start powering the Nova Corps. You'd never know. That's what Marvel has the advantage now, all right? They just gave you a spaghetti western / space odyssey / buddy film / superhero team film here, all right? This is going to give way to Ant-Man, which is going to be a scientific comedy / suspense, or Doctor Strange, which is going to be sorcery and horror, all right? Or, knocking on wood as I say it, Black Panther, which is going to be athletic. It's going to be intrigue. It's going to be more political. It's going to be world building. Or, knocking on wood again, Black Widow, which is going to be more intrigue, more spy stuff, more Hydra, maybe a little hand, you know. They got infinite ways to go now, all right? And I think it was 411 Mania. 411 Mania put up an article, why is the Guardian's success at the box office bad for Hollywood? And I looked at it, and I was like, bad for Hollywood? It's making them money. But they came up with three good reasons. One, there's not a bankable star here. They relied on B-list characters. You know, there wasn't a star name on this film, but it made that money. It destroyed the box office, all right? Two, all right, that being the case, there wasn't a big name actor carrying this, all right? You had Glenn Close, but she was in a backup role. You had John C. Reilly, backup role. Josh Brolin, not the star role yet, you know? As Zoe Saldana, backup role. They were not in the star positions, all right? And three, and I think Captain could go to talk about this, this was made for a fraction of the bank. And the effects doesn't look show it, but it was made for a fraction of the bank that other blockbuster films this year was made for. Marvel actually was economic with this and scored big. Rest of Hollywood? Uh-oh. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
I want to open this up to the captain. With the Guardians, one thing we didn't discuss, well, we couldn't have discussed it because it didn't happen until a few days ago. You know, we saw this big business game of chicken between Marvel and Warner Brothers.
Was I right?
Yeah. Warner Brothers blinked. So, to the captain, do you think this is by and large? The timing seems a little bit suspicious that as soon as we see almost a $100 million weekend for Guardians, that a few days later we see that Warner Brothers moved up Batman versus Superman to March. What about that? I mean, I'm glad it's going to be earlier, to be honest with you, but Captain America and Bats and Supes were supposed to be on the same day.
Well, I'll give you my opinion. They were going to move any old way. What they did by putting it out there on the same day and everything else, that steals – it's like redoubling the publicity. So you get automatic publicity for doing that. So that's a smart move regardless. They were going to move any old way. They would, you know, regardless of the fact. Then you have what happened here with Guardians of the Galaxy. That definitely co-signs the move because you were going to move anyway. It didn't make any sense. You're not as strong as the Disney situation right now. You knew that going in. So But you sit inside there from an executive standpoint. Yeah, okay, fine. They're coming out on this day. We're coming out on that day. That's publicity. Everyone knows about it. But you're doing it from a standpoint that you're going to move. Now you know you definitely have to move. And it may work better. You know, it may work better. Time will tell if it works better. But you were not going to put the movie out on the same day with them. You were not going to do that. That's an idiotic move. And I said that from the day one. But from a publicity standpoint, it's a great move. It's a great move. That's all. Back over to you, sir, after that.
You know something? Well, I think last time we were as I always say, the inner sanctum, when the entire crew, the Afro Nerd crew, went to see Guardians. I think didn't we have a discussion, or was it Lucy? One of the films we had a discussion about this, that if both movies were to be released that year, we would have seen it the same day.
Yeah,
real hardcore people, and even go beyond that. You know, old school. I mean, listen, this is called the Grindhouse for a reason. You know. I mean, I know the studios could not have done that, but what would have stopped the theater owners to create a spectacle? Well, listen, my ass would have sat down there for 4.5 hours rather comfortably, especially with the new theaters, the way that everything's comfortable and plush. I would have sat there for damn near 4.5 hours back with Cap and Bats versus Supes. If the theater owners had made it, you know what? We're going to have both these films seen back to back. The nerds would have had a nerdgasm. I'm somewhat disappointed, actually.
Hey,
I was looking forward to seeing both films back to back. That's exactly what I would have done.
It would have been fun. You know, we wouldn't have been the only geeks doing it. You know we wouldn't be the only nerds doing it. You know we wouldn't be the only enthusiasts doing it. We would, if we could see it in the same theater, we'd be making the pilgrimage. Like, all right, we just saw that. All right, let's walk over here. Hey, this is the line. Yeah, cool. How was the last movie? Okay, we're about to head over there now. Hey, how you doing? And then once everybody would be coming out, all right, this one was better. How'd you like that one? And it would be nonstop discussion. I mean, the bathroom lines would be long, you know, but it would be similar. Sports fans might remember this in New York, especially when we had a Subway Series rainout, I believe, at Yankee Stadium. There were people that had, on the same Sunday, they had tickets to the game at Yankee Stadium and Shea. And they decide to do it on the same day. So people were on the 4, the D trains, transferring to the 7 train, you know, Met and Yankee fans going to both games at once, just discussing baseball, having fun. We would have been discussing whichever movie we saw first and then comparing it to the second one. It would be a pilgrimage, you know. But, hey, that's no longer in the cards. So what could have been. Back to you, Afternoon.
These movie guys, the Suits, God bless them, always about the money. And I didn't think that they would really want to split the difference when it came down to that box office. You know, listen, I heard this online. I think I was looking at IGN.com, and they were discussing this, and they, in like fashion, they said, oh, we were going to see both. But they said, they also said that we would have seen Bats versus Supes first, because we've already seen Captain America. We kind of know how that's going to go. There wouldn't have really been any surprises per se. But the Batman Superman thing is more historic in the sense that we have never seen these two on film cinematically together. So that part of it would have taken precedence, but it wouldn't have been like folks wouldn't have seen both films on the same day in the same. So I really lament that someone blinked on this one.
Well,
it would have been an issue. Wouldn't have been a problem for me.
Yeah, you know what I said. I'm a Marvel zombie. But if Warner Bros. And DC ever get it right and give you a proper Batman versus Superman movie or a proper Justice League movie, that will be the first $1.5 to $2 billion movie at the box office, because I don't care who you are. Every nerd has discussed this. Every nerd has done Batman versus Superman. Every geek has brought up this. It's been in the mainstream. Those are some of the highest rated episodes ever on Batman the Animated Series, on Superman the Animated Series. Smallville. What was the question on Smallville? Hey, when is Batman going to show up? Who did they give us? Adam Knight. You know, it's what if they get it right and it's great the first day, you know those people are going to go out and tell their friends, and they will beat feet for the theater. It might be the first movie, if it's done with quality, where you go the 6 o'clock, 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m., all of those showings will be sold out, you know, because people will have to be, I got to get there and see it. I don't know how the lines are. I got to get there and see it. This is what I've been waiting for. They said it was great. Let me go and see it. You know, the Sunday would be crazy with people rushing, forgetting all other plans to go and see this movie. You know, and again, I admit it as a Marvel zombie. Yo, I love what Marvel Studios is doing, but these are the iconic heroes. These are the ones that are made the heroes in the mainstream almost. You know, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. If Warner Brothers gets it right, this is an unlimited cash cow. That's the frustration I feel with them, folks, because all of their moves have been wrong in
right,
building
yeah,
a universe.
Let's go to a quick groove. When we get back, I want to talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the reboot, the Michael Bay reboot. And there's a lot more to unpack. We got to talk about Zack Snyder calling into a Detroit radio show defending Aquaman. Did you hear about this, Daryl?
Yep. I give him
we'll
credit.
Talk about it. I didn't pull the audio. I didn't really think it was that spellbinding, but it's interesting to note. So we're going to chop it up after the break. This is D'Angelo, who should be appearing in a couple of weeks at Afropunk, folks, so definitely check him out. Superman lover, keeping up with the comic shop theme. We'll be right back. And you know what to do. Let's groove. That was the great D'Angelo channeling Johnny Guitar Watson, Superman lover. This is the Grindhouse, the comic shop up first, of course, and of course at 7 p.m. we have Afro Radio. Before the break, we're going to actually get into the latest release, the Michael Bay release of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, based on a comic book from the 80s. I think 84 was the first comic book. And I wanted to get to go to Daryl once again before I unpack on this thing. I saw it early this morning, and I will confess, I enjoyed the film for what it is. I mean, and also for the fact that it was a Michael Bay. I think Michael Bay is a hack. That's just my personal opinion. But for a Michael Bay film, considering how sucky his films are to me and probably to a lot of people, but, you know, it doesn't stop him from making money, ask the Chinese who have, you know, put the Transformers franchise in the upper stratosphere. For what it is, I enjoyed it. Daryl, what are your thoughts on the latest reboot?
Well, it was okay to me. It was okay. The characterizations of the turtles aside, that's a big sticking point for me. You know, I grew up with the 80s hard black and white noir books. I grew up with the original cartoon. So I'm a tough judge on this. I admit that. I will say we discussed it in the back. If Megan Fox was allowed to act like this in the Transformers movies, I would hold them in better regard. She was more confident here. She had better lines here. I don't know if there was a mea culpa from Bay or his production company to her with this, but she was definitely a stronger character here than anything she did in Transformers. Two, the fight scenes in this are light years ahead of the original movies. All right, I'll say it like that. The fights, and that may just be, Captain could go into it more about the CGI improvements and all of that, but just me sitting down looking at it, the fight scenes are better here, you know? But with that being said, it is a Michael Bay film. And similar to my thing with Greg Land on art, or my thing with certain writers like Morrison that I may have a problem with, they put their ticks in the story that pull you right out, all right? Like the collapsing tower that you see in the trailer. Just wait till you see it, folks, in the movie, and you'll be just shaking your head like, oy, all right? The Turtles could have used more screen time. All right, they could have. I've heard that argument, and you know what? I have to agree. For a movie about them, they are in less than half of the movie visible. I will say it like that. You guys have to watch it to make your own judgment. But it didn't totally suck. It was good. You could sit down and watch it without clawing your eyes out or stabbing your brain. Let's put it that way. If it was a 1 to 10 scale, I'd give it a 6. And believe me, I went in thinking it would be a 2 or 3. So that's about as good as you're gonna get from me, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, things going on in the film that I had to acknowledge. I thought that, you know, Megan Fox to me has been very, I mean, listen, folks laud over her beauty. And you can see she's had some work done for a young woman, which is also troublesome. I thought that just as a red-blooded male, that she was attractive before. But now you see some of the work. She's starting to go the Hollywood route of things, which is problematic, but we've seen that before. For whatever reason, when young women have to do it, that's a problem, but that's the way Hollywood operates. But beyond that, her acting ability, dare I say, for this kind of movie, wasn't wooden. Nor, you know, the films I've seen her in before, I mean, I didn't see Jonah Hex. I might have seen like a clip of it. And she just was horrible. This is the first film where she seemed to be like an actress and not someone who looks a certain way and she's just there as solely for eye candy. She, you know, now this is like Daryl said behind the scenes, if this Megan Fox would have showed up for the earlier Transformer franchises, it might have been a lot less hellish for the moviegoer. But be that as it may, I thought the CGI was superb. Daryl admitted that he saw this one-dimensionally. I saw it three-dimensionally. And this is, for whatever reason, because for those who are in the know, many of these 3D films are done afterwards. They're not actually filmed in 3D the way that Avatar was filmed. Avatar was a masterful movie where you were immersed in that world. Because we know that that the suits, they're very adept at looking at a money grab when they see one. Now they'll charge you a heck of a lot of money to see a film in 3D. But these films are very rarely filmed in 3D. They're processed afterwards, after the film is already on the shelf. This film, maybe they did it that way, but I noticed right away that the 3D really worked, really immersive, even beyond some of the stuff that we really talked about in a glowing way, even the Captain America film, which I loved, even the Guardians film, which I saw in 3D. You know, it really didn't hit me the way this one did. This one, the kinetic fighting that Daryl talked about, you know, there's a part where they're fighting their main villain, Shredder, on top of a building, a skyscraper. And it looked real. And again, and you have to remind yourself that these are 3D, that these are CGI creations. I'm assuming that there was some kind of live action animated kind of thing. The way that we see Mr. Circus when he does the eight films. So maybe some of that was in there. It's just a natural progression of things. The fact that, listen, we had to deal with the whole costuming and the you know, the Jim Henson kind of costuming thing. You know, that's 20 years ago. Now we've gotten to such a point that these characters can walk around with the actors seamlessly. You know, you forget that they're not real. You know, so I like the film, considering it was probably one of his better films for Michael Bay. And I'm kind of into it. Undoubtedly, there will be a sequel. The Gravy Train, you know, the franchise Gravy Train has been rebooted. So I liked it. Maybe I was just in that kind of mood to see that kind of film. You know, it's the summertime. You got to see this sci-fi comic books fantasy stuff. So I for Michael Bay, it was fairly decent, believe it or not. Captain, I don't think you saw it, but what were your impressions of what you're hearing about it, or even about the franchise just generally?
Michael Bay turned Megan Fox into a superstar. That's all I'm hearing. That's what everyone's telling me. That's all. That's it. That's what it is.
Well, listen, they had problems. I mean, she, being young, misspoke about the man that's, you know, feeding her, theoretically. I mean, you know, he's giving her work. She said something snide, and she wasn't in. She wasn't in the third one, I think?
Yeah, girl? She wasn't in the third or the fourth.
You know, but somehow they were able to work it out, and now she's in this production, and this appears to be another thing that she can be involved in that's going to be of a franchise kind of franchise deal. So she's able to bounce back. I mean, you never know. She might make an appearance on the other ones. It's still not – there's nothing to say that Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox can't make an appearance with the other films. I just wish Michael Bay had nothing to do with it. I'd like to see what would happen if it were in some other person's hands that could have – I mean, yes, and this stuff is based on cartoons, so sometimes it's difficult. But then again, the stuff that we like is based on comic books. That may be something for further discussion. Comic books versus animated origins, because the comic books seem to have more depth, and it seems as if you would think there would be greater difficulty to make a movie from a video game or a cartoon, but they're making them. A billion-dollar takedown for the last iteration of, you know, of the Transformers. So I don't know. I don't know. All right, moving along, because we still have quite a few more moments, minutes. I do want to actually want to talk about Run DMC, Daryl McDaniels. Did you hear about this, Daryl? Another Daryl. That Daryl McDaniels, you know him as DMC. That he has dipped his toe into the comic book world. I think he's of a certain time period. Many of those classic hip-hop artists were into comic books. We know that Method Man, the Wu-Tang, was certainly into comic books. So I guess it really isn't beyond the stretch of imagination to hear that Daryl McDaniels has his own comic book line. Did you hear about this? I think at the Boston Comic Con, actually our friend Ray, shouting out Ray. I forgot, you know his comic book store? We should also give his comic book store a shout out, Daryl.
Don't know offhand, so I'll have the info for next week.
Yeah, I'll look it up in a few moments, but I definitely want to shout him out. He's at Boston Comic Con even as we speak. And so is DMC, who's out there promoting his new comic book line. Did you know anything about this?
Oh, he's believe it or not, he's been in the game for a couple of years now. As far back as 2011, he was talking about doing comic book projects. It's just for whatever reason, it either never materialized or B, never got the mainstream pub like this is. This one, when he announced it, it was all over Comic Book Resources. It was all over Comics Alliance. And I'm sitting back like, well, guys, he's professed his love for comic books before. I mean, why are you guys all shocked? You know, it's one of those things like he said it before, and I guess people didn't pay much attention to it at the time, that way back when, and now it's like, whoa, he's coming out with a comic book? Cool. Oh, I don't have answers for these things, you know. Maybe they just didn't figure that he would take the time to get a comic book project together, but lo and behold, he's taking the time to get a comic book project together. And like I said, people, as far back as 2011, he was talking about getting into the comic game. So, you know what? All the power to him. And it brings more eyes. It might bring in a different segment of fan into our realm. You never know. Back to you, Afrinert.
Yes, our friend Ray, his website is called Mutiki Sales, mutikisales.com. And he's of Japanese descent, and he sells Japanese-themed toys. So I'm going to put a link to his store in the chat room. Definitely patronize this young man. Check him out. He's a good friend of ours. Actually, we need to bring him on the show so he can also discuss his store and also his interest in pop culture. But yeah, Captain, what are your thoughts about – now, listen, the golden age of rap for all three of us, you know, listen, it means a lot to us, but there's always been this kind of connection between pulp / pop culture, at least early hip-hop, that you don't see now. So it really doesn't seem to be, like Daryl said, it really is not that shocking that these guys would be involved in this. I've seen Method Man at New York Comic Con. So, I mean, it's not shocking. Even in the lyrical content always made some kind of reference. LL Cool J, all these guys made some kind of reference to comic books. I mean, even, I don't have the clip, but even he was interviewed on local Boston TV, local Boston news, again referencing DNC. And he had said that, you know, he grew up in New York, and he was a Marvel guy because of the New York connection. So, you know, being a New Yorker also had a lot to do. Being a New Yorker in the 80s, the late 70s, 80s, had a great deal of connection or a great deal of influence on someone reading comic books. So he was a New Yorker, a preteen at that time. Of course he would be into the Hulk, Captain America. I mean, he mentioned these names because, you know, he was a Queens guy. And a lot of Queens guys in that time period growing up were into comics. So, Captain, what are your thoughts about that Golden Age comic book connection? So, I mean, Golden Age hip-hop.
Well, as you said, you know, those guys were definitely connected. 100%. You said it perfectly. That was definitely on point. But the reason why something like this is very important is because what it does. Now imagine, like, you go to see a Blade movie. How do you feel as a black person going to see Blade when it's, let's say, the second movie? Not the third one, which was trash, but the second movie. You feel somewhat empowered. So we can say that the imaginary has a real-world effect on what you do. It definitely has. So you need to see that Blade a trillion times over, and it has a real-world effect. So the imaginary always has a real-world effect. It does. If that wasn't the case, you wouldn't have 2.2 billion Christians. It's imaginary, but it has a real-world effect. Something real is happening. You have 1.5 billion Muslims. It's because what they're doing seems imaginary, but imaginary has a real-world effect. If the imaginary did not have a real-world effect, you wouldn't have those numbers of people doing it. It would disappear. So, again, in the comic book world, when you see Thor, when you see all these other white characters, which are all imaginary, they're not walking around you, but it has a real-world effect. It definitely has a real-world effect. It has a real-world effect, and it strengthens in relation to black people, believe it or not, your subjugation. But when you have more black people out there, it has a more real-world effect in the imaginary, because then it makes you stand up and make you feel that you can go out and do things. So DMC, which I believe it's October 29th, 2014, that's when the number one is supposed to come out. It needs to be supported, and we need to have this a trillion times over, because imaginary has a real-world effect. All right? That's the reality of it. So I'm so much for this. And we need more of these individuals, the hip-hoppers, the people with their name out there already, so you can recognize the comic book and you go, oh, because it's DMC, let me check it out. Oh, because it's LL Cool J, let me check it out. Oh, you know, it's Scarface, let me check it out. It makes sense. Then we can bring up the other people, the regular people who we don't know, the really great writers and everything else, and we just need to keep having that more and more and more and more and more, because the imaginary has a real-world effect. Back over to Seraphonerd.
Yeah, I also put the link to DMC's latest endeavor. Simply go to dmc-comics.com. Again, dmc-comics.com. And I'll try my best to see if I can get DMC on the show. Also, just interesting enough that Drez of Black Sheep follows our show. I tweeted him out, and he followed us. And it was in reference to Chuck D about how whack hip hop is, and he followed us and retweeted something I said about the current state of hip hop. So. Again, we're talking about guys of a certain time period, Generation Xers, anyone born between 1965 and 1980 is a Generation X. And Generation X operates a little differently than the millennials. So, again, going – like Daryl said, our Daryl, the uncanny, you know, I'm always going to big up these guys, and it's important to really support these guys because – this is a way to expand. This is what we've been talking about. I mean, we've got to start somewhere. I mean, God bless the late Dwayne McDuffie. We need to start seeing our own imprints. We have to. As a matter of fact, you know, so much time has passed that when DMC was being interviewed on this Boston News TV show, the host, you could tell the host was riffing with him because the host was of a certain age, and he was talking about he also liked comic books, and he also said that, you know, he noticed that there was a dearth. Now, this was a white host now. He said that he noticed that there was a dearth of black characterizations, but he was also able to rip off the Marvel black superheroes that he was aware of. He talked about the Black Panther. This is the white host now. Black Panther he threw out there, Falcon, and he also threw out Luke Cage. So, you know, time has passed now where people kind of sort of know who is who. DMC is an icon. So what would happen if we had more people of his status to throw their weight behind these comic books? And let's face it, people are getting movie deals. They're getting options. A comic book is just not a comic book. You know? If someone came up with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, when you look into that history, it came out in 1984 as a comic book. Now it's a multi-million-dollar franchise. I mean, a comic book is not just a comic book anymore. Maybe it never was. But it really is, it's, you know, you can't take this stuff lightly. So, again, folks, patronize these people. We're going to make a greater effort to really highlight many comics, but we're going to highlight the characters of color and the comic book creators of color because they need to be. They need to be. Folks, this is The Grindhouse. Every Saturday, 6 p.m., the call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. You know, I also mentioned that Zack Snyder, the director of Bats vs. Supes, Dawn of Justice, that we know that it's filming in Detroit, which is actually a good look for Detroit because Detroit need the money, certainly. So he was listening, just by chance, he was listening to a local radio station, and they were goofing on Aquaman's power set. So Zack Snyder, and I checked, you know, the vocal thing going on there, because, you know, some people, it could be a Howard Stern devotee joking around or something, but it appears to have really been Zack Snyder. And he called up to say, hey, Aquaman is, you know, he said, not that he's appearing in my movie, but that was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. Not that I'm saying he's appearing in my movie, but don't sleep on Aquaman. He's not the way that you think. He doesn't just talk to animals or talk to sea creatures. He said something I really wasn't aware of. Darryl probably knew this, that Aquaman's trident can break the skin of Superman. That it can make Superman bleed, and that we do know he has super strength. He's probably on Wonder Woman's power level, I would think, or slightly below. No one really talks about that. So what are your thoughts about Zach calling in? And, you know, we don't know what this thing is going to be. I'm likening it to a hot mess, but I hope it's not. But he's calling in to defend Aquaman. So he said, basically he said, Aquaman is a badass. So maybe we will see that Aquaman on film. Your thoughts, Darryl?
Hey, you know what? I agree with him. Because for too long, the joke has been made for stemming from the stupidity of Super Friends, which, hey, you know what? I watched Super Friends younger. I laughed at some of the stuff what they did with Aquaman. But there comes a time where you grow up. And when you grow up and you read some of the Aquaman books that came later, you notice that, hey, he isn't much of a joke, you know? And if you still consider him a joke, you know, then you really didn't read the Grant Morrison JLA run when his issue's in there. You know, if you still consider Aquaman a joke, you didn't read Blackest Night, did you? You still consider him a joke. You haven't been following the the John's run that the now with who is it, Jeff Parker doing it? You haven't been following that run if you still think he's a joke. You know, that's the whole thing. So many people have learned to look at Aquaman from the how he was portrayed in some of those god-awful, yes, I said it, Super Friends episodes where where he was a one-note joke. Guess what, folks? He is not a one-note joke. You better respect the Trident, all right? What they didn't tell you is, you know, he could communicate to the amphibious parts of your brain, right? He could actually, similar to Avatar, he could essentially waterbend you into having a stroke. You know, there's things that Aquaman can do because he was raised underground with a little bit of sorcery and a little bit of swordplay, along with his braggadocious attitude, you know, that will leave some of these guys like, really? I didn't know he could do that. Yeah, you paid attention to the stereotype. You got to understand the warrior. So that's one thing. If they get Jason Momoa to do it, you know Jason Momoa ain't going to be no joke. You know, that's the only reason I'm rooting for it, to see him skewer somebody on film. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Well, I suspect, and I know the captain's going to know about this more intimately, I suspect they're going to have to namorize him. And if they do namorize him, referencing Prince Namor the Submariner, if they do that, then it's going to go to a point where Marvel is going to have to take heed to that if they get him right. Because, like you said, they straightened out a lot of stuff. What made him lame was that, you know, he was always dependent upon being in the sea. That if once he's out of the sea, he's depowered. But his current interpretation, he can get water from being topside also. He can get water from the air. For strong, he can leap great distances. You know, this guy, you know, you have to think about it. If someone were to really be able to survive underwater many depths below, your skin would have to be bulletproof. You know, you would just have a whole, his power set really would be badass. He would be, you know, Superman wouldn't necessarily be able to shrug this guy off so easily. As far as power, if we're going to really get into it, if they do it the right way. So they got to make this guy where Superman can't just shrug this guy off. So I hope that we see this. And also the whole undersea world. I mean, this whole thing, I have no idea. I have no idea how Zach's going to pull this off. Because now that I think about it, you know, I love Marvel, but DC, these characters really do have, they're iconic. And they have their own worlds. Aquaman has his own world. Wonder Woman has her own world, her own mythology. Matter of fact, Aquaman has his own mythology. Like what Daryl was talking about, he too has his own mythology. There's sorcery. There's antiquity with him. There's a lot of stuff to unpack with him. So I don't know if he can do that in a two-hour film. I don't know. I have no idea. I just don't want to see Dragon Ball Z like what I saw with the last Man of Steel, pardon me. I don't want to see that. They got to tone that down. And you know something else, Daryl? We only got about four minutes. They've been hinting at this. The way that Warner Brothers is molding their world in the context with how Marvel has molded their world, from my understanding, if Batman versus Superman works, that could be a franchise unto itself. Because this is not Superman, I keep calling Superman, this is not Man of Steel 2. There is going to be a Man of Steel 2. So we're hearing Green Lantern and Flash, just the way you have Batman and Superman. So are we to expect that this may be Warner Brothers' approach, that you could have these team-ups, that these team-ups can in turn be their own franchises. We could see a Batman and Superman film again after this, that this is not really going to be a one-shot if it's successful. I mean, that might be a way to really not be competitive with Marvel as to how they do things. That is interesting to me. What are your thoughts about that?
Hey, if they got a plan, you know, what they got to do is follow up with the quality. Go back to the very first thing I said. Quality. That's the key word here. Quality. The bar has been raised. You got these plans. That is perfect. You got the heroes that if you give them quality, it will score untold millions of dollars, billions of dollars. But the trick is to get the quality. All right? You have people that never heard of Guardians. You have people doubting Guardians who are telling me they are going back for a third week of watching Guardians. Like, I can't believe how good this movie is. You know what? We could go and watch it again. That's what Brothers needs from their franchise. Get people to keep on coming back.
One quick thing, again, we got less than 3 minutes. Any word on the black panels, the African-American or diversity panels that came out from last week's San Diego Comic-Con? I know Orlando Jones was out there. Erica Alexander was out there. Did you hear anything on some of the, what came out of those panels? What's his name from S.H.I.E.L.D. also, that actor?
J. August Deadlock. Richards.
Deadlock. Yes.
Yep. J. August Richards is a badass, all right? Some guy tried to clown him. Why don't I see you on TV? Why aren't you over there? He sat there and he reeled off all the roles he was in since Angel for a good 5 minutes. Shut the dude up. And go like, damn, you gangster like that? And he went like, yeah, and I'm coming back to S.H.I.E.L.D. So J. August Richards is going to be back at S.H.I.E.L.D. And don't sleep on the black ladies, folks. All right? Erica Alexander, she's got her comic and her novels. She's doing that, but she's planning on directing and hosting some of the unnamed projects coming up. And Cree Summer, Cree Summer is voicing everything. And she said, yo, I've voiced inanimate objects. I've voiced white people. I've voiced, you know, I just have fun. I'm a character actor. I do characters, not race. Check how she said it. I do characters.
We got about a minute, and I got to reach out to Cree because I did try to reach her publicist, and I was assured that she would come on. I really want to speak to her because she is, again, like you said, very prolific, has been working steadily. Like some folks think these people disappear, and she's probably the hardest-working actress. I mean, she stays busy and paid. Because she's consistent. She voices half of animation. Let's keep it 100.
Her and Regina King. Don't sleep on them. They may not get star roles in movies, but animation, they're right there.
All right, listen, we got less than 30 seconds. Folks, it's been real. We'll get into this again next week. There's a lot more to discuss. Dal, as always, man, great to have you back. Great that you enjoyed yourself in Canada. We want to hear more about that. Next up, Aphrodite featuring Captain Kirk.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
You?
Oh, I'm part of the Neighborhood Crime Watch. Where this works is you watch, I commit the crime.
Oh, my God. No.
There's no talking. You just give me your watch and wallet now.
Here's my problem. You're black.
Oh, Mr. Crane!
What? I'm Daddy Crane. I'm a big shot.
So am I.
If you kill me, the headline's going to be, Black Guy Kills White Big Shot.
And that's the last thing we need when we're trying to elect an African-American as president.
God. How about if I just blow your brains out right now?
That doesn't work for me. Work for you?
Please.
Hey.
All right. All right. Watch. Wallet. Gun. Knee. Right foot. Left foot. Thank God for guns, huh, Jay?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
First off, folks, I hope you are thoroughly enjoying your summer. I know I certainly am. This is the second half of the Grindhouse. Believe it or not, we're batting second. This is Afro Nerd Radio featuring Captain Kirk. Let's just get into it. Let's go to a quick urban alt groove, black rock, psychedelic soul, afropunk. We do what we do. You know how it goes. Let's go to a quick groove. When we get back, simple discourse. It is what it is. This is Disclosure with Nile Rodgers and Sam Smith. And the jam is called Together, Together. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
Confusion in your heart.
folks, I wanted to let that ride. Once again, that was legendary guitarist Nile Rodgers. Disclosure, Sam Smith, Jimmy Napes, together, always giving you the absolute very best of urban alternative groove. This is the Grindhouse, and it also is AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk. And speaking of the Captain, you're needed once again on the bridge and in the ready room and on the holodeck. How will he do it? Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Shazam, I'm here.
What about a switcheroo? You know something, Captain? We forgot. I've been putting this off for a hot second, and I would have liked to have seen what the uncanny Daryl B. thought about this. There was an Esquire blog entry, I think in mid-July, and the title of the blog entry was, Are Black Superheroes Good for Black People? We did not talk about that. Time permitting, maybe we'll get into it in this broadcast, but I did want to discuss it with Daryl B. Maybe next week we will, you know, wax on that at the top of the show. But the article was kind of, sort of a switcheroo anyway. It was, you know how they're doing on the internet. They've been doing this for years. They'll have some kind of crazed, controversial topic to draw in the viewers, mm-hmm. to draw in the clicks, and then it's not exactly what it appears to be. So, but I would have liked to unpack that on that because that just seems crazy. Are black superheroes good for black people? I mean, come on. All right. You know what? Believe it or not, I mean, listen, there's a lot of things you could be discussing that's of real importance, but for feces and giggles, for excrement and giggles, you know, this is a PG show, so I'm not going to say the S word. Watch for the Afro Nerd After Dark show. God forbid that show actually makes it, Captain. That'll be, you know, that show might actually take us over the top. But anyway, I want to talk about Busta Rhymes. I know it's innocuous, and we're about a week late on this thing. I know that our friend Q Storm, check out Q Storm Media, by the way. And also, I got a shout out to Q. He did us a solid. He has a YouTube presence as well as his own website. He also does triple duty with Sergio Mims, who I think is waiting in abeyance, I think. We'll get to him in a moment. He does some writing on Shadow and Act. But he shouted us out. He did us a solid. He told folks, check out, you know, the show's not for everyone, which is true. I like that tagline, too, because some people aren't ready. But I should have pulled his audio. I don't have the time all the time. But he gave about 5 minutes on this swagger wagon thing. There's a commercial that legendary hip-hop Busta Rhymes did, and quote-unquote black Twitter really had a hissy fit about it. And I suspect folks likened it to a kind of minstrelsy. Now, as I say it, I wish black Twitter would weigh in on all the other stuff before they got to Busta Rhymes, although I think it was an act of minstrelsy. But what is it minstrelsy right now in 2014, going into 2015? What is it minstrelsy? But I thought that this Swagger Wagon commercial was a bit problematic. And I'll get into it, but I'd like to hear what the captain thinks about this. Captain, what are your thoughts on Busta Rhymes appearing in the Swagger Wagon commercial?
Well, Busta Rhymes is doing the typical same old thing. He's not being cognizant of what actually is going on and what his imaging and what his branding should represent. Notice what I said there. Should represent. At this given juncture in time, should represent. He's sticking with the same old thing, what he has done pretty much in the past that has gotten him the check, the big paycheck. I would think, you know, now that he's older and you're more experienced, you would have a tendency to move differently. But let's not only talk about Busta Rhymes, let's also talk about the people that greenlit the commercial, their perspective. You have to understand, a lot of times, not all the time, a lot of times, but not all the time, the people signing off who are usually white in a situation like this, their interaction with black people. When you work in private industry, I'm not talking about those of you who work state, federal, and city black people, where that's been a very strong come up for us. But in private industry, a lot of times, you have a floor, there's 30 white people, there's two black guys that work on the floor. And these are not from the top executive. These are not the normal black guys. These are exceptional black people. That's why they're working with the 30 white people. And the executives at the top don't really interact with these black people that's there. They don't. So what's their interaction? Their interaction is what they see on the internet, what they see in the newspaper, what they see on TV. That's their interaction for us black people. And that interaction makes a reality in their mind. The reality in their mind becomes a reality in the real world, and that's how these things come to part. So from their standpoint, they say, well, black people, as per rule, we have the exceptional black guys working for us, but black people, as per rule, this is what they do. They run, they jump, they sing, they dance, all right, and they go to jail. Then you have the exceptional ones that will work at our company here that I really don't even know about them. And that's how these decisions come down, and that's why we have this here. That's what happens. So they don't really understand. I'm not giving them a pass. I'm not giving them a pass. They don't really understand. But you, as the black person showing up to the commercial, have to understand what's going on. And Busta Rhymes has that power. He could say, hey, I'm not doing this commercial. Come on. What's going on? Some people would say, what was going on in the commercial, that's the rule, all right? That's not the exception. That's how a lot of black people do behave. And if we're being honest, a lot of black people do behave that way. Not all of us. We know that to be true, especially the people that listen to this show. Most of the people that listen to this show do not behave in that manner that was displayed in that commercial. And check out the little girl. The little girl was very talented. She nailed all the black isms perfectly in the commercial. That's just by the by. So that's what you have, and that's what you're dealing with, you know? That's what you have at this given point. You need more maturity on Busta Rhymes' part, and also the the commercial executives need to be a little more plugged in, or get somebody who can be more plugged in. That would probably be a black executive. Back over to you, Seraph on Earth.
Friend of the show, Kid Success. She's way in advance. Actually, I thought it was Sergio Mims from Shadow and Act, but both are Chicagoans. So Chirakians, I hate to go there. That if they get that area straightened out, that Chirac thing is a done deal. That they need to do something quick. So they will not be able to. They can shrug off the Chirac thing. So let's go to 312. Kim, is that you?
Yes, it is me, Kim Success in Chirac. How y'all doing?
Pretty good,
Kim.
Haven't heard from you for a
great,
while.
Great.
You have any thoughts on this deal with Busta Rhymes or?
Not on the Busta Rhymes. I got on. The reason why I came on right away was about the petition and something else. So I was up on those, but I'm not up on Busta Rhymes. I'll have to check out what's going on with him. Oh, but Sergio said he's here. I don't know if he's on the phone, but he's here.
He is here. All right. Let me bring both of you Chicagoans in for feces and giggles.
Chicago people.
Thank you.
Serge, you there?
Sergio.
Yes, I am here.
Okay. The floor is yours.
Yeah. Well, initially, I mean, we could chop this up for a few moments because it's not that important. Then we'll get into the hip-hop petition thing. What are your thoughts about Busta Rhymes? I mean, it's innocuous, but I thought how black Twitter reacted to it was interesting.
Two things. First of all, I couldn't watch the whole commercial. I couldn't make it halfway through, to be honest with you. There have been similar commercials. I remember the protest over that Mary J. Blige commercial for
yes.
One of those fast food places. I can't remember. Was it Burger
McDonald's.
King?
I think it was
right. It might be Kentucky Fried Chicken or something. Maybe it was McDonald's.
You're right. One of those places, right.
Yeah.
Kentucky Fried Chicken or Burger King, everybody went off on her. You know, she claimed later that that was not a commercial. That's not the version she approved. But, you know, look, I'm hard-pressed to think of any rapper who is politically conscious, who's popular today. You know, not back in the day when you had people like KRS-One and Public Enemy. I'm hard-pressed to think of any who are conscious today. So it doesn't surprise me that he's in the commercial. You could exchange them with Drake or with, Lil Wayne, anybody. They're not politically conscious at all. So, you know, whenever they see a buck, they can see a, you know, they'll go for it. By the way, the reason I also called is because your whole thing about Chirac, the deal. As I said, there's a movement in Chicago to stop saying that. The other thing that people never talk about is that the murder rate in Chicago was much, much worse 20 years ago. You can look it up. Back in 20 years ago, 1994, there were 931 people shot and killed. I should say killed. And it hovered around there 20 years ago in the high upper 800s or close or 900s. Back in the 1970s, it almost reached 1,000. So why is it now, when the murder rate is practically half that rate, is everybody now making all these jokes? One is because of the internet and the 24-hour news stations. Now everybody knows, the whole country knows, the whole world knows, when before it was just a local problem. And even then, the papers never covered it. You can talk to any reporter who was reporting 20 years ago. They said it was impossible for papers to cover murders. They wouldn't touch it. Now it's front page news. The other reason why they make it so much was because Obama's from here.
Right.
You know, if he was from Cleveland, they'd probably be talking about the Cleveland murder rate. I don't know what they're trying to say, that, look, you know, he's from Chicago, and look how terrible Chicago is, so he's a terrible president, or, you know, look, he can't stop anything. I don't know what the deal is. But I just find it really amazing that nobody was calling Chicago Chirac back in 1994.
Well, I'll say this, because we're going to, you know, I want to give my opinion on the Busta Rhymes thing and then move along. But the Chirac thing, what you just said is problematic unto itself. The fact that folks are trying to figure out a way to lessen the term Chirac or get or some kind of community effort to stop the Chirac thing, why don't you get around to a community effort to stop the killing so we wouldn't have to use a term like Chirac? That's the irony. We seem to be into this thing where we always set up these movements to address other things instead of the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is called Chirac because of all the crazy murder rates. Start like right now, Kathy, you know about this. Isn't Sharpton getting ready for another march for Eric Garner? You know, the gentleman that was in Staten Island that was choked out.
Right. Yes, he is.
Yeah, so he's getting ready to march for that. I'm like, you have folks shooting each other. This is kind of off topic, but it's the same thing. There was a low budget rap video shoot in the Bronx at a bodega. Now this is a game. People hate to talk about hip hop being in the center of this stuff, but it's just coincidence. It's just coincidence that there was a rap video shoot in a bodega. The two quote unquote stars of the video got into an altercation about who was the star, and this video footage of this gentleman, one of the gentlemen, casually shooting four or five bullets into the body of his opponent while having a drink in his hand and not spilling the drink.
Oh, yeah, I saw that video. Yes, I did. I saw that.
It's crazy town. I mean, so we're going to march for the chokeout, but this kind of thing, there's video footage of people all over the place locally doing horrendous things. We're not marching for that. But because, once again, we got the white power structure, we got the white police officers, we got to march for this. It's laughable.
Well, you know,
I could care less.
It goes back to It goes back to a question I always have, and every time I ask anybody this question, they don't have an answer. And my question is that, are you telling me that when a black guy is killed by a white guy, somehow he's more important than if he's killed by another black person?
Yes, he is. He is.
You say yes, but believe me, every time I ask that question to people who are upset about a killing, say, like of Zimmerman and a Trayvon Martin, every time I ask that question, people don't have an answer. They look at me and almost sometimes they begrudgingly agree with me, or sometimes they try to avoid the issue. But that is the issue. So you tell me they're more important.
It's a psychological thing. It certainly is.
So the white man is God.
To people who don't have their mental faculties, or those who don't want to be honest, those who are suffering from poor self-esteem, yeah, certainly. It's got to be. I mean, it is what it is. Because many in the black community appear to be suffering from this. The music that we're going to talk about in a few moments, or even with the Busta Rhymes thing, is very much about self-loathing. I mean, I was casually driving around earlier today before the broadcast, and if I had to get gas, and I know you probably have the same experience, you go to at the gas pump, you will hear someone playing hip-hop music casually, and at any moment in the song, I'm only listening for a couple of seconds. Nigga this, bitch that, I gotta kill this bitch. I mean, to hear this kind of stuff, we are ingesting so much self-loathing, and it works itself out in how we play this out politically. We believe.
No, I had it worse yesterday. I had it worse yesterday. I was on the subway. Guy comes on playing that very music, loud rap music, to my left, right? Another guy comes on playing rap music to my right. So I'm being bombarded from the left and the right, you know, in a subway. They're not even wearing earphones. You know, they're just playing this stuff out loud. And I'm thinking, like, when can I get to my stop? Because I'm about to lose my mind.
Yeah, well, the thing of this, Sergio, is that we don't really want to get to it in a second. But the deal is, I'm looking at it. I mean, we talk about this a lot. But when you really get at the core of this thing, it's never positive. There's got to be a moment where there's something positive that you're listening to. But it's almost as if it's like a McDonald's diet. You can't eat McDonald's every day. We've seen Morgan Spurlock attempt it, and he had to be hospitalized. You can't eat that kind of stuff every day. But imagine what it's like to ingest that kind of music with that kind of messaging every day. And I'm listening to these people casually. And listen, at any moment, right here, someone with a hip-hop song going on, current hip-hop, it's never a good thing. And
I go back, and I've said this before, and I say it again. Anybody who's out there listening, I highly recommend you must read the seminal book, Description of Black Civilization, by Chancellor Williams. It came out in 1971, and he talks about black self-hatred as the number one cause. You can trace it even today. Book wrote over 40 years ago. You can trace it today to what's going on. And Chancellor Williams was blind, and yet he could see what was going on.
I'll tell you something. I think, so 40 years ago, I would say what he was saying might have been more conspiratorial than it is now.
No, read the book. Read the book.
I'm not doubting it, but I'm saying the way it's playing itself out now, with this stuff being rotating incessantly, and the nature of it, where commercial hip hop that I hear in the streets is never a positive thing.
It is conspiratorial. I mean, you have it's owned by white people, it's controlled by white people, and you have the sellouts like Russell Simmons, who is the definite. I mean, you look up a Webster Dictionary of sellout, it's this picture.
Well, you may be onto something. I'm usually hesitant to use terms like sellout and Uncle Tom, because most of the time people use them incorrectly. But you might be onto something with Russell. Now, let me give my opinion briefly, then we'll go on to the other topic about this petition that I gained ground. What I thought was problematic about the video, and this is shouting out Q-Storm. Q-Storm had an opinion, and I'll put his opinion. He has a video show. I'll put it on in the chat room in a moment. But he was saying that the position is something that has some credence. He's saying, well, listen, hip-hop is not solely a black art form anymore. One can make the argument that hip-hop is very much a white thing. It's been sold to white suburbanites for many years. So this is in line with those patrons. And he also said that what would happen if this was a black family doing the same thing? Would this have been glossed over? Would this have been a big deal? My thinking is, I wouldn't have liked it if it was a black family. Matter of fact, we've dealt with this for many years, that there was a thing about black folks dancing in commercials. You know, every time McDonald's had black people in there, they weren't really into dialogue. It was mostly them dancing around. So seeing dancing black people in commercials has always been a problem. What I didn't like about this commercial is it looked a little bit too close to a minstrel act. We had white, like the captain talked about this, we had the white actors really, and rather masterfully, God bless them, they were mimicking black idiosyncrasies, black idioms. You know, listen up, mother father. And you know what the mother father was really meant to be. It's riffing on a joke. The neck shaking is infamous for being a black female thing. She's neck shaking. She's dancing. Listen up, motherfathers. The actual song itself, the music itself, was so much like drill music, like drill music. It was very much of hip hop today. Maybe even if the music was a little bit more, I don't know, happier. But the music was more ominous, like some kind of gangster record. So they were really doing this. They were really getting down with their quote-unquote bad selves. We've seen white folks do this before, and it's never gone well. I wasn't comfortable with that. I thought it was very much a minstrel show, and always having the black male there to qualify it or to legitimize it. I mean, heck, to me it was a modernized version of Bojangles and Shirley Temple. It could have been
now,
that to
you
me.
Have to keep in mind that most commercials, well, not most, but many, many commercials, those particularly selling major products like cars or home appliances, they're tested before they're broadcast. Marketing companies will test commercials to see how they play. Now, no doubt, I'm sure this commercial was tested. Who it was tested to, I don't know. Was it tested to a white crowd only, a racially diverse crowd, or did they test it with black people and the black people thought it was wonderful? I have no idea. But I would like to know, what was the testing procedure for this commercial that they said that the response was positive, and was positive enough that they could go ahead and broadcast it or put it on the Internet?
Well, something went awry because we saw that, quote-unquote, black Twitter. We have yet to see them actually come up. If they're going to call themselves black Twitter, they need to be a bit more, I don't know, powerful or something. I mean, something should come out of this black Twitter thing. But anyway, black Twitter shows their disdain for this minstrel act. And I've seen black folks critique white folks doing this kind of stuff before, but I've also seen black folks say, like, for instance, V Nasty from the Bay Area, who's a sucky rapper. She believes, she says the N-word with reckless abandon, white female. And her excuse is that, listen, I'm from the hood like anybody else. This is the way we speak. And I don't know if I could deconstruct that, to be honest with you. We just got to that point. She's from the hood.
Well,
she,
you
but,
saw
but,
how you saw how.
Hold on. My point is, when black folks were critiquing it online, they were saying things like, "Well, why does she speak that way? Why is she doing that?" And I said, "Wait a minute. This is where you go into what you talked about Sergio. Black folks are critiquing her, thinking it's weird or problematic for a white person to say it. But I'm saying, wait a minute. Why aren't you this critical when black people, if you saw a black girl from the same hood, different complexion, saying that, you wouldn't say it was weird. But because you think in your head, that whole white supremacist mindset, because a white woman is speaking that way, you're saying, well, why did she do that? Well, because she was raised in this environment, just like the black girl was raised in this environment. But you're not critiquing the black girl. Why is that? So to me and to Q, and Q, you know, listen, he has a sound argument, but my thinking is if a black person were to do that commercial, we should be as critical of them doing monkey shine as we did with these white folks, because it's all a minstrel act. Just before there was, you saw Al Jolson putting on the black makeup, and then you saw Burt Williams putting on the black black makeup. It's still a minstrel act, whether it's a black person or a white person. Enough said. Serge?
Well, you know, it's just like people are up in arms when Questlove defended that Australian rapper, what's her name? Azalea?
Iggy Azalea,
right.
Yeah.
Right, he defended her, and he got a lot of grief for that. The way I look at it is that, first of all, I really don't know who she is. I know she has a hit song. And I seems like black people are very confused about her. There are people who, like, I just read an article just today in which somebody, black girl was basically defending her. And I was like, well, why is that? Is that because she does rap music, or because you think she's cute? Actually, she looks exactly like the Wayne brothers from that movie White Chicks. Remember that movie? Take a look at how they look like, and take a look at this girl. They look exactly the same. And I saw, at first I thought it was one of the Wayne brothers in white makeup. I'm not sure. But, you know, everybody's confused about the black people are not confused about rap. They don't know what's going on. They seem to be taken over by white people. Macklemore?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that no black artist last year in the top 10 had a hit record, you know, that the fact that every time you go to war show now, it seems like more and more white people are winning them for black music. You know, black people are going crazy. Like, what's happening? Well, you know, you made your bed, you lie in it.
Yeah.
You let it happen. So now you're going to complain about it.
We got another call. I want to keep everybody online, because we're segueing into this petition. But before I get to the call, I will say this much, Sergio. The thing I said it before. I almost have to blame black folks on this one, or this alleged hip hop community, because. Or even the music industry, because we haven't created anything. There's nothing worthy of getting a Grammy. What is out here aside from what I play, what's in the underground, soul revivalist movement, the Afropunk? There's things going on, but as far as what's happening commercially on urban radio, there's nothing worthy. There's a new guy from Brooklyn who sounds really doing Southern hip hop, but he's from Brooklyn. And that's Bobby Shmurda. And Bobby Shmurda, I mean, they're giving out rap contracts like coupons. He sounds utter garbage. No musical ability whatsoever. He's the East Coast equivalent of your guy, Chief Keef. No musical ability whatsoever.
Oh, brother.
And yet we're just handing out contracts. No one's going to award this stuff. It plays out for the street people, but it doesn't go beyond that. These aren't musicians. I mean, it, even on a hip hop level, it's just not any good. But it's what's hot, and they have, I think, maybe upwards of 10 artists that are mimicking, like they're actually doing his music. Like, you know, they took that song, and now they're doing their own version of his song. That's what we're doing.
Well,
it's,
you see,
it's crazy.
Look, and another thing I have to blame is the black media. Your boy,
what black media?
Unlocking
what
the
black
truth.
Media? What
okay.
black media?
Which is true. There is none. Your boys unlocking the truth, right?
Yeah, exactly.
When they signed a deal with Sony a couple weeks ago, I went around, and as a matter of fact, I was in contact with Lena Dawes. You remember Lena Dawes, who did, you know.
The interviewer, yeah.
Right. We've been in constant touch. I see her in New York and everything. So I told her, I said, I want to see how the black media is going to cover this.
They didn't.
And I told her, guess what? I bet they won't. And that's exactly what happened. there was maybe a paragraph in Ebony.com. There was maybe a paragraph in The Griot or The Root. That's it. I've been seeing stuff about them everywhere, but not in the black media. They've been totally ignored.
Let's go to another call. Hold on. I want to open up the lines. 703, welcome to Africa Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
Hey, gentlemen. It's Bison Alive calling from D.C.
All right, Bison.
What's up, man?
Hey, great. First, I want to, Sergio, I've been following you for almost a year now. You know, some great stuff on Shadow and Act. Really get people to thinking. But, hey, you guys sound like some old-ass men. Hip-hop is
because
not
we
for
are.
Us. Hip-hop is not for us. It's always, music is always going to be for young people. That ship has sailed when back in a few years ago when they consolidated the media buying corporations, and you have only Clear Channel and maybe Radio 1 damn near owning everything, and then they merged the hip-hop and R&B charts, and then they forced out the local DJ who maybe once upon a time will bring in some local acts. So now you have, you know, the disease known as Southern hip-hop has infected the nation. That's done. Young people don't even, I talk to them, they say, listen, you know, I ask them about the charts and all, they say, listen, hip-hop is made for the clubs. It's not made for the casual consumption. It's just made, quote-unquote, turn up in the clubs. So I know you got, you know, New Yorkers are kind of, you know, I know hip-hop was created in New York, but that bean has sprouted, and, you know, we're dealing with the weeds right now. So to go back and try to kind of rethink and put in our value systems on 15- and 16-year-olds, that's out the door.
Well,
so we either
got to
create another, we either got to create another aesthetic and move on, or just accept it that it's been compromised beyond reproach, cut the head off, and throw it in the garbage and start over.
Well, sir, let me tell you, I do not disagree with a single thing you have said. Not at all. I think you're absolutely right, and I will tell you straight up front, and Afro Nerd knows this, Deeper knows this, I am not really that, not have that much knowledge into hip-hop. As he knows, I'm classical music. I even do a classical music weekly show in Chicago. So that is my thing, ever since I was a kid, right? But I did listen to other music. And when early, I would say 20 years ago, when Public Enemy was the group and all those people, I was insane about it. I would see them, I saw them at least 4 times in concert. I have all their albums. I still have the albums, not the CDs. And, you know, when they were basically pushed out, and then the gangster rap stuff started coming in, I lost interest. Plain as day. You know, Public Enemy was doing stuff that made you think. They were political. I don't want to hear about banging in the hood. That didn't interest me. The fact that they're doing a movie right now about N.W.A., directed by F. Gary Gray, does not interest me in the slightest.
Well, you know, let me say something, and if I put it on you, Bison, because I'm hearing some of your background. So just bear with me. I still have you on, but I have you on mute because of your background noise.
There's nothing here. I'm quiet. I'm in the house. Weird.
No, I'm talking
not
about,
you, Sergio.
No,
that was Bison.
No, yeah, Bison. He's in the car. A couple of things. I don't disagree with what Bison said also. I don't disagree with it, but I have to challenge it in this sense. I don't like it when black folks are treated in a peculiar fashion or so much so differently than everybody else. I'm looking at how everybody else is allowed to breathe except the black man. When you see someone like Taylor Swift, Not my deal, but I do know that she gives off this kind of wholesome imagery or kind of sort of innocence, and, you know, she does her own thing. There's no real black equivalent to that. No,
not now.
Hold on.
There used to be.
My point. Well, hold on. Let me get to my point. My point is that why do we have to get such a different message from everybody else? See, we're on one note right now, and that's the problem for me. There should be something in the black world that is analogous to the white world, but in the black world, we don't seem to be worthy of decency, of musicality, of intelligence, of political foresight. We used to have some of these things. When there was a Miss America contest, there was a Black Miss America contest. You follow me? And almost in every faction, whether that's good or bad, all of us grew up with that kind of thing. Where there was a white thing, because we weren't allowed to play in their reindeer games, we had a black version of that. If there were white fraternities and sororities that you could not get into, we had black fraternities and sororities. It goes on and on. But now I'm starting to see that we're getting segregated again. Our segregation is worse than it's ever been. That we do not have any other style of music. I find it problematic that these young people only listen to this. Why is the messaging for black youth so different than for everybody else? I mean,
well,
even
it's what you were alluding to.
Hold on, sir. If there's white people listening to hip-hop music, they can still go to something else. The black kid, not really. There's something wrong with that. I'm listening to stuff. I was raised on hip-hop like everybody else. Now, of course, it's not the same hip-hop, but at the time, at least if you didn't like one part of the hip-hop game, you could go to five or six different genres within a hip-hop game. Even commercially, you could do that. Something is wrong, and again, no one is going to reward this music. When you have someone like NBRE talking about nobody black won the awards, yada, 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 I would challenge him and say, what is worthy of an award? Who? Chief? Lil Wayne? You're going to give these guys awards? Nicki Minaj? I mean, now, the quality has been so degraded that now it's open season for white folks to get in that and to move you to the side.
The
blues you created is no longer around. I mean, white folks are not going to blues. I mean, black people are not going to blues concerts. They're not going to rock concerts. And they're not going to go to hip-hop concerts pretty soon. History has already seen this. Serge?
Yeah, now the thing about it is that, and if you read look at Black Box, there are many black artists who are doing what, for just a convenient handle, who are doing positive music, who are doing more adventurous, more different music. The problem, of course, is that they don't get any kind of play in the media. I came across a piece about all these black women singers who, I'll be honest with you, I've never heard of. But all these black women singers who are very much in the NBRE mode, or they're more in the, they may be in more of the folk mode, they may be more in the rock mode, along the rock mode, but they don't get any kind of play. But then there is the Afropunk Festival, which I guess, I don't know, has happened already. You have all these black rock artists there, right? And this is a major event that attracts how many people? 100,000, 200,000, maybe more. And let's face it, some of the hottest chicks you've ever seen in your life go to these concerts.
You know it.
I've seen the pictures. All with natural hair and dreads. You know, they're out there. But there is a conspiracy. I'm not a conspiracy nut. You mentioned it. There is a conspiracy in the so-called black media and the other media not to have exposure for these artists
I've
seen the lineup. I've seen the lineup for Afropunk this year. It's an extraordinary lineup.
I have a lady friend that's coming up from North Carolina to see this Afropunk thing. So it's interstate now. I didn't really know she even knew about this, but she brought it to my attention. Hey, I'm going to see Afropunk. I'm going to be staying up for a few days.
The question.
That's how big this thing is.
No, but here's the question. This goes right to conspiracy thing. And alluding to the gentleman who called from Washington, D.C., what if Afropunk, these, these artists, the people who support them, these are the majority of people who like this music. In other words, the Nicki Minajs, all these people, they don't have the kind of attention, the kind of following that the media wants us to think that they have. How do we know that the majority of younger black people today are not heavily more into the Afropunk scene?
Well, listen, I'll tell you something else, and I think even Bison will attest to this. I played Happy before conventional radio started playing Happy. I played Happy like a year and a half ago because of the comic shop, because of the Despicable Me soundtrack. It was very much in theme with a comic book show. It was an animated movie. I heard the song. I said, this song is a groove, and I started playing it. Lo and behold, they started playing it. Now, Pharrell will tell you that when he presented this song, they came up with a whole reason why they didn't think it was going to work. The executives behind him said, well, you know, it's not really of a certain beats per minute. It gets very technical. It's not really very much of a beat per minute. It's not really electronic music per se. They gave a whole bunch of excuses to not play it. Now, when they played this thing was an international hit. That song was so good that it had Muslims making videos dancing to Happy. Now, how frequently does this stuff go on where the good stuff they could say at the drop of a hat, I don't think that these people don't know their asses from the hole in the ground. Trust me.
But it's the same thing. You talk about Chief Keef. This guy ain't selling anything.
No, he's not.
Are people
not really.
Going out buying his stuff? They're not. The people know about him because they write about him all the time. You know, World Star Hip Hop and Media Takeout write about him. You know, but he's not selling anything. Just because what people think he is because they write about him all the time. How do we know Nicki Minaj is selling? You know, she's got to do a porn cover for Anaconda. I've seen it. I've seen it more than once. She's got to do a porn cover for Anaconda, right?
There's
you know what? There's
that.
An old joke. There's an old joke. There's an old line. And every time I see her, there's an old line they used to say about when a singer would audition for somebody. Pardon my French, folks, but when a singer would audition for somebody and she wasn't very good, the guy would say, why don't you just shut up and show us your tits? In other words, you don't have any talent. Just show you your body. Every time I see Nicki Minaj, that's what she's doing. She doesn't have any talent, so
actually,
she shows her body.
She's actually doing the same 20-year-old pose what's her face did, the one before her. Same pose. Little Kim did that pose 20 years ago, literally. I mean,
before she screwed up her face, right?
Yeah, before the Michael Jackson thing,
right?
Before she did her own moonwalk. Let's go. I want to mention something real quick. This is to Kim's success. She was calling in about this petition. These change.org petitions. I don't know how successful they really will be or what the deal is with them, but you know. It's a nice thought, but I think trying to protest electronically is not, unless it's a lot of people. I don't know how electronic testing really, how good it really is, but the essential thing is it's a demand for record labels to stop disrespecting black women. And I said, really, it is so singular and so racist and so sexist against a particular group. I mean, we're talking about specifically black people, that this is worthy of a class action suit, to be honest with you. I think it has gotten to the point now where it is so much of about one message. It's not about, in all respect to Bison, it's not about younger roles. It's about why does this message have to be so different with a black face than everybody else? Even if there's a crass depictions of white folks, they still have something else commercially on a large scale to even that out. We don't have the balance to even that out. We've been, let me tell you how long this has been going on. Ready to Die, the album that Biggie put Biggie Smalls on the map, is a 20-year-old album. I just thought about this a few days ago, because that Ready to Die, people lord over that album. I didn't like it at the time, because I thought that at the time it was just an East Coast version of what was going on the West Coast, and it was so much about nihilism on wax. That message, and again, it's entitled Ready to Die, is literally, that record came out September 13th, 1994. So we're approaching the 20th anniversary of nihilism. So nihilism really goes back further than that. But let's just put it where it is. The message has been the same. So, you know, I don't know about all of us being old men, because 20 years ago it was still the same message. Why hasn't it really changed any for black people? With a black face. That's what I want to know. And when Happy is released, and if there's a ray of sunshine, if you open up the window a little bit, wow, Happy becomes an international hit. It has Muslims making videos dancing to Happy. Something's wrong.
The other thing too is alluding to what I said about Nicki Minaj, is that the fact that, you know, people back then have talent. They had genuine talent. Those kids who play for the kids who are unlocking the truth, you cannot deny those kids have an extraordinary talent. And that's hard. It's hard to find. It's hard to develop. You know, record companies today, they're in for the quick buck. They don't have time to develop artists like they used to. Now it's in for the quick cash, the quick kill, get out, find the next person. That Iggy Azalea, nobody would be talking about her a year from now. You know, she's a flash in the pan. Let's find somebody else. And unless she gets desperate and then has to do things like be naked, like Nicki Minaj, just to get people interested in her. But it comes down to talent. The talented people, it seems to me, are the ones who are being ignored by the mainstream media, even though they do find an audience, like you're talking about, like at Afropunk coming up in a few weeks. You know, as I said before, I don't think any of these people who are people make a huge fuss about are really selling. You know they're not selling because people are not buying albums anymore. But the fact of the matter is that even if people were still buying albums, they still wouldn't be such a big hit.
Well, the thing, and I want to open this up to Captain as well. He's been quiet. And even Kim, I'd like for her to say some things. My issue is that we're at the point now, we're at the precipice. We're looking over a valley. And the deal is the music has gotten to such a low quality, no one's really buying it with what Sergio is saying. There's no more product to actually really buy. There's no record stores. So it doesn't make any sense, really, for there to be this segmented kind of thing. But the issue is we're not even able to be – we don't even have a product to present to an award show. I mean, they're letting Fancy – Fancy is the top song that Iggy Azalea is doing. And it's such a minstrel act that, you know, they give her butt injections. They literally blackify her without having to be black. She gets the black boyfriend. Even the black boyfriend thing is a way to do the come up. But one would think – aligning yourself with some misguided Negro, one would think that would not be a wise move if you're a white person. But now, thanks to Kim Kardashian, you can align yourself with that badassery thing. Same thing with what's her name? The one that took over twerking and has no buttocks to do that. Miley Cyrus.
Silas, right.
Yeah. Cyrus, Miley Cyrus. You know, listen, she channels some of the black ratchet stuff for her own for her own devices, but she's using it to catapult her to make the money. When you slap
right.
some white skin on that, you can make a lot of money. But for the black folks, where's your black product? We're at the point now. You do not have a black product that's going to mean anything. none of this doesn't really mean anything. I think I don't know. It's very confusing. I don't know how you're going to get awards. I don't know where this is going to go, because you have to have different genres. Actually, hip hop has been so watered down now, so to speak, where you don't have a physical product to present. I mean, we don't do the blues anymore. We're hard pressed not. I mean, we do, but we're not trying to show a black face to it. We're not trying to show a black face for the rock thing. The only thing we're really invested in is hip hop, and even that, there's inner machinations that are trying to make that white also. So they're making black people irrelevant.
We don't want to do funk anymore.
No,
I mean,
well,
with exception of Prince,
we don't want to see the face.
Right. I mean, I heard the playback when we talk about the James Brown film, The Get On Up, right? And you know, I'm like, when I was going, there was nobody who meant more to me than James Brown, you know. And you listen to that stuff he does. Listen to his stuff, and you go like, is anybody out there doing this stuff anymore?
Listen, we only got about 2 minutes, unfortunately. We're going to have to revisit this on Wednesday. But I got to ask one more thing. I tell you how bad this is. You will see, when you see people actually doing legitimate black music or legitimate soul music, it is only palatable if white people do it. Anytime they come across, and I mean the corporate structure, comes across a white girl, a white woman, I should say, who can actually blow, like someone like the late Amy Winehouse. There's plenty of UK singers, even in the Americas, that can actually blow and emote like a black woman. They will sign that person right away, and they will legitimize her. I saw Justin Timberlake, a year ago on the MTV Awards, he was doing a black act and given all of the accolades that goes along with that. But there are many black women of color that can also blow, but they're not going to sign them up. They're not going to put them out there like that. But it's more interesting for the corporate structure to invest in a white person that can sound and sing black. I mean, it's always been there, but it's far more insidious where the black person is literally moved to the side of equal or better talent. And the hip-hop thing has contributed to that, because now many of us have sold ourselves on the cheap. And we sold ourselves so much of the cheap that we can't come back from that now. NDRE's asking, there's no black people getting awards. There's no black product, sister. I wouldn't give an award to any of these clowns. It's over. It's a wrap, folks. And it is a wrap. We got less than a minute. Captain, any closing remarks? We got about 47 seconds remaining. We'll revisit it on Wednesday, 7:30.
We do it again this Wednesday, 7:30. All right, listen.
Sergio asked for some funk, so we're going to give it to him. Bernard Wright, Habo Globotrobin, classic. Habo Globotrobin. See you on Wednesday.